I'm here in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Boxable facility where they're placing a huge bet on affordable housing. We've got CEO Galeano Tirmani here, some completed units behind us. We're gonna check out the factories and ask all the important questions, even get into some conspiracy theories, and also find out what happens when we say code word poopy pants during the tour. They're kind enough to have camera guys, so we're gonna hand the camera off to Manuel, who, thank you so much for helping us record this today. And let's get going. Galeano, good to see you, man.
Good to see you again. Always a pleasure every time you come in. And you're right, this is a big bet on housing. I think it's the biggest bet out there with the biggest upside. And we're all in right now. So pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, you had a couple of these set up last time I was here, but there's way more. They're labeled now, completed.
Exactly. So we have our standard casita, which is kind of like this universal building box that's configured with a bathroom, kitchen, bed, and couch.
19 by 19?
Exactly. And so this is how the unit would come off the assembly line. And then these are examples of how you might dress those up to kind of customize them a little bit.
Yeah, it's so great how you package it for shipping. It like triples in size once you unfold it, right?
Yeah, so that's like absolutely fundamental principle that we have here that is going to enable mass production. And when we look at the other players in the modular house, factory-built housing industry, we see that's the biggest limitation for them because all of the other guys are shipping a wide load. So it's either, you know, 12, 14 foot wide load on the highway. And whenever you go over 8.5 feet, you explode your shipping costs because then the rules, the laws require you to not just have the truck that's carrying the house, but also another car that's a follow car, sometimes two follow cars with flags on them. In some states, you need police escorts. You have restricted routes, restricted travel time. Can't drive during rush hour. Can't drive on the weekends. So it just doesn't work, and it just stops the whole thing in its tracks. So when you look at the existing modular players out there, they have small regional factories. It's not really mass production because once they ship more than a few hundred miles from the factory, it's not cost effective. Mm-hmm. You're better off just building on site. So the main idea behind Boxable, the first idea was we fold up this 20 foot wide room down to 8.5 foot wide. Then you can ship at the lowest cost. Then you can scale production. And that is going to allow us to have hopefully a massive factory that is on the scale of the automakers. So we want to have a factory that looks like, you know, a Tesla Cybertruck factory, where we just have this absolutely massive scale. We can push down all the costs. We can have assembly line principles. We can bring in automation and bring housing, house manufacturing in line with modern manufacturing principles.
The way it should be.
Exactly. The same principles that we use to build, you know, a sneaker, an automobile, a cell phone, a television that results in those products being available and the lowest possible cost. We want to make that translate into housing.
Yeah, I love all the vertical integration too. You guys even developed a custom low boy to load the units on.
Yeah, we are working on bringing everything in-house that we can, kind of one at a time, hitting the highest cost saving things first. So whether it's us building our own trailers or us manufacturing our own parts or our own wallboard or our own foam or our own toilets or whatever it ends up being in the future, the more of that stuff we can build ourselves, we can take those cost savings and pass them down.
Awesome. Can we take a look?
Yeah, let's go.
You got the Tesla Powerwall here.
Yeah, so this box is the kind of first one in our system. Where, let me just turn off the audio there. This is kind of the first box in our system. So it's 20 feet by 20 feet. And when we were thinking about how do we start the company, we actually originally built a bigger box. So it was like a 40 foot by 20 foot box. And there was two of them connected together just to create like a 1400 foot, single family house. And then we showed that and then we went and thought about it and said, where's a good place to start? Maybe we start with our smallest unit and we market that towards backyard accessory dwelling units, mm-hmm. which are becoming really popular in California. I just read a statistic where now about 20% of new builds in California are backyard ADUs. So I think that they might have done about 20,000 of them last year. So that market is even way bigger than it was when we started. And so we've been showcasing people this and saying, look, here's a great ADU you can drop in your backyard at an expedited time frame. And then we're also working on other configurations of these 20 foot boxes where we take one like this and we stick another one on the side, and then all of a sudden you have a two-bedroom house, and we stick another one on the side, and then maybe you have a four-bedroom house.
The way you build these, you're able to cut into the wall so you could do circular windows or other door openings and stuff without compromising the structural integrity?
Yeah. Another big part of what we're doing here is we're innovating on the building materials and manufacturing methods. So we're building the houses using different materials than you would see traditionally. The way they build traditionally is those materials are selected because they work for site construction. So a guy can pick up some pieces of lumber and nail them together by hand, you know, with hand tools. When we looked at it, we said there must be a better way to build these. And so we dove into alternative wall structure materials. And that's giving us the ability to do cool things like you said, which is just make a big wall panel and then cut different shapes, different openings into the wall. And really it's a big puzzle and we're not finished yet. The current design we're phasing out and we're bringing in a 2.0 design. And then there will definitely be a 3.0 design after that because we're already working on it. And basically we need to serve all these different masters and it's not easy. First of all, it has to be the lowest cost. It has to be lower cost to build our wall panels than anyone else's or else, you know, game over. Then we need massive levels of energy efficiency in the wall. We need fire resistance, especially for multifamily. We need hour rated assemblies. We need low weight. We need a reduction in components. So we don't want to have a wall where you have 1,000 nails and 100 little pieces of wood. We want fewer parts that are simpler, that can be cut on and formed on CNC machines.
Yeah, the tall ceilings really go a long way in making it like an open, nice space too. And you're at a 4-hour build time for these units?
Yeah, we're able to put out about 2 per day on one shift right now. We're not really trying to go fast just yet because we want everything to be perfect before we really ramp up. However, we are installing about $15 million in new automated manufacturing equipment as we speak, and that's going to really speed things up once that all comes online. A lot of the new innovations happen kind of inside the walls and help reduce costs, help increase the structural ratings and other things. But, you know, this is, you know, really the bare, simple living unit that, you know, we think can accommodate a few people. And, you know, you've just got your couch living room area, your bed area, your bathroom and your kitchen. And, you know, as you said, there's high ceilings, which gives it a really good feel. And that was something that was really important to us. And when people come in person versus watching it on a video, they feel that right away. And the space just feels amazing. And, you know, wherever you're living, you know, just kind of the vibe that you feel when you're living there, it totally changes your quality of life. And we think we've achieved that vibe with, you know, this design.
Yeah, I stay in a lot of Airbnbs, so I get to see a lot of different spaces. Sometimes they're just out of a garage or something even smaller than this. But for the 400 square feet, it's really an expansive space. It'd be a great Airbnb.
Yeah. And, you know, lots of different, you know, innovation going in all over the place. You know, one good example of that is our cabinets. So we're not buying these cabinets from an existing manufacturer. We've designed our own and we've basically gone to extreme lengths to simplify the design, reduce the number of parts, make it compatible with a CNC machine, pick materials that are resistant to water and mold.
Do you CNC these in-house?
That kind of stuff. So right now, this is actually not the newest design. We have a new design coming down, and we have a third-party manufacturer that produces them per our designs, but that's definitely something that's on the radar to bring in-house once we figure out all the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, nice. And this one has a balcony?
Yeah. So we just threw on like a little kind of deck area out here. And you can come hang out.
Nice.
Pretty nice.
That's a really small electric unit, I guess, since it's so energy efficient, you don't need much.
Yeah, so right now we do have a 100 amp panel on there. And then if we put in a gas appliance, we can get it down to a 50 amp panel. So there's different considerations there. You know, what's the power coming to the site? Do they want to use gas or do they want to try and stick to electric?
So, it's great they have options.
Yeah, and that's another, you know, big part of the puzzle that we're trying to dial in. And we're doing a lot of innovative stuff on the way the electrical setup is inside the walls as well, and the types of appliances we're using, the types of lighting we're using as well.
It's three primary electrical channels, right?
You know, I'm not exactly sure how the layout works. We could ask Kyle more about the electrical design.
Yeah, cool.
Cool, keep going.
We gotta go back out here.
Go back through, yeah.
So what's the additional cost if someone wants a A-frame style roof?
You know, on the roofing, we haven't really gotten as far down the road as I would like on that. It's something I've been pushing for. So we do have like a few roof designs done by third parties, and we've been talking to roof suppliers. Eventually we'll have a really easy to understand options where people can order the roofing kits through us, and they're easy to install. There's definitely a lot of work and innovation that has to go into that. You know, a lot of guys are using these lumber truss roofing systems. You can either have a higher pitch or a lower one. And another thing I'd like to do is be able to take advantage of that space. So, you know, if you do go up into the roof, I don't want a bunch of rafters blocking it. I want that space to be open so you can have kind of a loft area. But that's something that's, you know, further down the line for us to innovate on.
It makes a lot of sense. You'd prioritize the primary unit, make sure you're pumping out a ton of those first, the low cost thing. It's great to see that you have all these options, and I guess a contractor could come in and do that later, but I'm glad you guys are just focused on that for now.
Yeah. And even these kits that we did here to add the different facade, like the log cabin or the Caribbean, we didn't even put too much work into that. We kind of just called a local contractor and said, hey, come slap something on it. And the customer can do that too. But again, another place where eventually we'll have our own product for that. We'll have our own innovations. We'll make it easier to order that through the website. And I think, you know, when you look at all the engineering work we've done, you know, we're going to end up engineering a better solution for the cladding as well eventually.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are there any differences on the interior of this?
Just really mostly decoration, but you can see that it gives you a totally different feeling once you're in.
Is there any way to utilize that space in the roof?
I mean, you could go up there now, just depending on the type of roof, you're going to have rafters in the way. But definitely we want to get there. You can hear the funny log cabin style voice we put in here, and the different smell, and then the different furniture style as well.
Almost feels like I'm back in Texas.
Yeah, for sure. Cool.
Are all the units the same on the inside?
Right now, we're just producing this one product. That's the Casita. So everything's the same on our stock.
For these units out here, is there any changes?
No. We'll go through the rest, and they're just all the same. And then we do have some other 20 by 20 boxes with different configurations that we'll see at the end of the tour, and that includes, you know, basically a bedroom box that you're going to connect to a Casita box. That's the difference in those new units. And then the factory will just be producing a few different boxes, but you'll have really unlimited customizability once you start connecting those and styling them differently inside.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't need to go through them all, but you can see just really different decorations going on.
It's all kind of themed.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's nice. So we'll be really excited to start seeing these deployed out in different projects around the country.
This is what you'd see, I guess, in like New Mexico or...
Yeah, exactly. And you can see really, it's nothing's changed about the unit. We just threw on this extra piece here, but it's the same house there. And one thing that's like super important is the standardization. Mm-hmm. So in the factory, we can't be customizing things. We will never get efficiency.
Yeah.
You know, you would never think, oh, I'm going to buy a pickup truck, but I want it to be 2 inches narrower, 3 inches longer. I want to add a second, you know, seat on top of this seat. Like, obviously that wouldn't work. And the cost to do a custom vehicle would be incredibly high. But with housing, pretty much all we have out there is custom buildings. So that requires a lot of extra work and complication and cost when you're doing that, all the way down to the guy who's doing the initial framing. So, you know, instead of a guy literally just building the same frame over and over, And every time he reaches for his hammer, it's right there. And he's doing the same thing. He's going to be walking around. He's going to be taking measurements. And all of a sudden, the time to do it just absolutely explodes. And that's where assembly line comes in and you get really big efficiency. So on the other hand, you do need a degree of custom buildings because there's a million different use cases. There's a million different customers, sites, geographic areas. So we're solving that by creating a system of units that are standardized but can be assembled differently and finished in the field to give the customization so that hopefully we can get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, cool. I wonder if you'll be able to integrate humanoid robots like the Optimus bot into your production line.
Oh, it'd be a dream. That'd be a dream. Because really, you know, the price of everything is just a function of the human labor. Mm-hmm. Like no raw materials actually cost anything. They're just, you know, rocks and dirt and trees. That's just all there. And it's you know, in one sense, it costs nothing. But then once you add in the human labor component, that's when you start figuring out how much does it cost, because how much did I have to pay those guys to pull it out of the ground and process it and format it. So obviously, I feel like, you know, once those robots hit their prime time, we're going to see, you know, a revolution throughout the entire world in everything,
yeah,
where basically the cost of everything starts dropping to zero and the whole economics of everything changes dramatically. And, you know, it's really pretty amazing, actually, that we're here watching this time in history where we're about to go through like a full quantum shift,
yeah,
on, you know, how everything works and what we can build and what we can do. And, you know, the standard of living, I think, for everyone goes up. So it'll be really exciting one day to get those robots in the factory and get them building stuff and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most important problem in the world. And Elon Musk calls it the idiot index, is the difference between a product's final cost and the material cost. In construction, it's usually maybe 25% of the cost is in materials. So maybe with your automation, you're able to get that to 30, 40, 50%, and then who knows how far you can take it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, when I look at Tesla, I always thought, you know, these guys have figured it out with the cars. It's amazing. They've been able to, you know, re-engineer everything from scratch versus the legacy guys are changing what they've already done. So he just has such a huge advantage over all of them. You know, it's incredible. But then when I saw the robots, I was just like, holy shit, this, yeah, is bigger than I ever could have imagined, because, you know, there's a limit on how big cars can be. There's only so many cars made every year and so many people, whatever. But the limit on the how many robots there can be is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be more robots than people probably, you know, within our lifetime.
Yeah.
And if Tesla's the company who has the manufacturing ability, the AI, and the new humanoid robot tech, you know, I feel like there's no chance that anyone else can dominate that. So it's really Tesla's upside after showcasing those humanoid robots is now, you know, 100x of what it was before.
Yeah, like Tesla, you also have to deal with a ton of bureaucracy issues in innovating, doing new things.
Yeah, yeah, and on the automobile manufacturing side, of course, there's bureaucracy and everything, and it's really bad. But, you know, on the automobiles, it's not as bad as the houses, because you don't have this geographic regulation where not only are there federal laws, there's state laws, and then there's local laws. And then there's differences from here to 50 miles over in a different town of what they want you to do, both on the building code and on the zoning. And it's been such a localized thing that it's very micromanaged. So the regulation for housing is a complete disaster. You know, it's basically like, if you're comparing it to cars, let's say I drive my car from Nevada to Utah and I hit the Utah border and they say, sorry, you can't have your car in Utah unless you change the back bumper height up 3 inches. And that's what we're dealing with housing and being able to try and standardize it and mass produce it so it can go out everywhere. So it's really a big problem, but it's also a big opportunity for the company, because,
yeah,
if we are able to standardize things and able to brute force our way through this, a huge part of the cost savings from our product is going to come from the regulation. I feel like, you know, half of it is changing the way we're building, but the other half, or maybe even more, comes from the regulatory reform, because that's where all the costs are coming from. If you look at the costs to, you know, deploy, you know, an ADU. I've seen permit costs that cost more than a casita to put an ADU in a backyard in California. So, you know, obviously that needs to be fixed. And for Boxable, what we're doing is so big, and there's so many issues that we need to brute force our way through this. There's no other way to get through it than for us to just fight and fight and throw resources at this thing and whittle it down. So, you know, the only way that Boxable succeeds is if we are really big. Like, we need big and we need resources, and that's the only way to fix this problem.
Yeah, the big unlock, in my opinion, seems like if you can get into the FHA system and get a 30-year mortgage on a $50,000 house, all of a sudden you're only paying $400 a month in rent, and then you just need a little plot of land, you're good to go.
Yeah, financing is a big part of making it attainable. You're going to open up a huge, you know, swath of customers by having the right financing.
Now that rates are more attractive, I wonder if there are other options you could do, like 30-year mortgages without FHA.
There's different interesting stuff, all the way up to these kind of equity companies where they'll literally come and say, hey, give me 50% ownership in your house. You pay us nothing monthly, and we give you, you know, a few hundred thousand to build an ADU. So there's other kind of creative stuff going on as well, and we'll see how we can work that all into the Boxable sales process.
Yeah, cool.
Let's keep going. We'll go walk inside the factory now.
So now we see the machine that makes the units.
Yeah, and it might be a little noisy in here because you can see we're doing some construction.
These have great noise canceling, so we're good to go.
Okay, nice. So we got in here just a little bit, like maybe 2.5 years ago or
yeah.
So, and we, you know, went from nothing, an empty building, to scaling up, bringing in new equipment, bringing in hundreds of people, getting, you know, everything online and starting to actually produce products. So even us being able to do that was very unlikely, because right before that, it was me, my dad, and Kyle in a garage down the street, me like messing around with glue and pieces of wood. And I built the first few prototypes by hand. And then we just came in here and went big and went hard and ordered hundreds of houses worth of materials. We now have engineers on the team. We have all these different people helping us. Versus when we started, it was just us.
Yeah.
So we were winging it and we sent it, and here we are. And the product we came out with was good and it worked, and we're able to sell it. And you know, you can see them here on the line. But now this next generation product that we're about to launch, that actually has all that input from all those people and all this time and real
nice.
World experience. So I think it's going to be leagues better on every front.
For sure.
So right now they're digging footings for various equipment. We're about to put in, like I said, about $15 million in new equipment. So that means all this whole line here from start to the end will basically be one huge machine
nice.
That makes the panels. We'll be dropping off pallets of wallboard, pallets of foam on this side. The machine's going to pick them up, put them together, form them, cut the window hole openings, bring them into that machine at the end that's already installed, which is an automated painting system,
cool.
and boom, panels come off. And we think we're going to get one panel every 3 minutes by doing it that way.
And are these off-the-shelf robots, or are you like customizing robotic arms?
Yeah, so it's pretty much all custom.
Cool.
There are some parts within this line that are standard equipment that
sure.
then we've implemented into the automation. So that's the result of, you know, a bunch of research and testing to figure out what that is, and be really exciting to see it come online, see the increase in quality, see the reduction in cost, and all of that good stuff.
And when you get that dialed, you just copy paste to every factory around the world.
Yeah, at a certain point, it will be dialed in to where we can copy and paste, but I do feel like even this is still an intermediary
yeah.
step where we're gonna keep going above and beyond with that crazy automation. We're gonna keep refining, we're gonna keep innovating, and we're gonna keep going. So down here, we'll have a panel making line, and then this assembly station. Right now, it goes about 10 stations. And that'll be doubled, so that'll be the length of the whole factory,
cool.
basically. And then you have, let's say, it moves down every station every 2 hours right now. When you double it, it goes to one station every 1 hour or even less by doubling it.
Nice.
So you know, that final output of how fast the houses will come out will go up and up.
Cool.
So
should we start at the top of the line?
Yeah, we'll just walk over here a little bit.
Are you still mass ordering all the parts for hundreds of homes at a time?
Yeah, so, sorry, let me just double check my next meeting. One sec, sorry.
They've got a few completed units over here. This is the end of the line, so we're able to see, I guess, they take it from each step. They're all labeled from staging, lamination, paint, power, assembly, and finally the finishing. So,
I have a meeting at 12 really that cool I can't take the, because I'm doing a video.
Can whole you thing here, and this is
take
a
it for
huge
me.
Overhead
I just forwarded
gantry
it to
system.
You.
So, in any of these places, they're able to pick things up and move it along the line to the next stage. That way, they're not dealing with a bunch of forklifts and stuff. Really cool system.
Yeah, and one other thing that we're installing here is basically an automatic conveyor system. So right now you can see the houses are just sitting on wheels and we push them by hand, but then they're going to be sitting on a conveyor that moves automatically either when they press a button or it'll just move slowly and continuously.
So are you using these overhead gantries often?
You know, we're using them right now, but I think in the next steps, we're going to rely on those
less and less.
The thought when we put those in was we don't really know what's going to happen, where it's going to be, how we're going to have to lift it. So we just said, let's put one big thing in where we can do anything we want.
Yeah, cool.
But now that we really know exactly what has to move, where it starts, where it ends up, we can do kind of different systems on
so
that.
So you've got wheels on the top. Does it go on its side sometimes or?
So that is to bring the wall or the roof back. So, you know, obviously the folding happens. You can kind of see it a little bit over here. And then the roof pulls back and that just helps the roof drag across the top of the walls. And I think that's going to be phased out eventually, but for now it's easy. So you'll see here we have the three pieces of the roof as it's folded, and here is the three pieces of the roof unfolded.
And what's inside the blue pipe? Is that electrical?
Yeah, and the pipes are just there so it doesn't pinch when it unfolds. And here's more examples of the folding. This is the folding floor, and that's going to hinge up at this point, right to there, and then you get down to that 8.5 feet. So the core of the box and the core of most of our boxes, even the bigger sizes, this is the space that doesn't compress because it has stuff in it. Mm-hmm. And this one has a kitchen bathroom in it. Another box could have something else in it. It could have a big bathroom. It could have a staircase. Whatever we need to put in there, there's room for activities. And then here, it's basically empty space. Most houses, most rooms are empty space, mm-hmm. and we don't want to be shipping that empty space. So, you know, this folds up and you end up, you know, core uncompressed, and then just the thickness of a few wall panels here when that's folded up.
People talk about those Home Depot modular units they're selling, but those don't come with any of the HVAC, mechanical, electrical stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny because posts about those online go viral because they just see the price tag and the picture of the product. But what they're not saying is that's not the real deal. In fact, they're just shipping you a kit of parts, which probably you could go buy yourself for cheaper. And then once you actually build that and spend, you know, months assembling it all together, you know, the costs are way higher than what we have. And I think that when you look at comparable products, ours is, you know, the lowest cost on the market by a lot. And, you know, you also have to say, if you're talking a factory built room module, is it going to meet the building code? Building code is very long and very strict and very difficult. So a lot of these like folding shipping containers from China and stuff, if you try to deploy those anywhere, eventually the building department is going to come and say, fuck you, take this out, lose all your money. And it's outrageous, of course.
They're dealing with all that same bureaucracy too. But I guess if you are able to solve the bureaucracy, that's a huge moat for you guys.
A lot of different players, a lot of different variables that have to get into place to get these houses approved. And, you know, if another company wanted to come in and do that, I honestly don't know how they could. If we hadn't been able to drum up all the resources and money to do this and find projects that didn't require the modular certification, we would have been dead, because what company can turn on a manufacturing operation and then put it on hold for 2 years or 1 year or even 6 months while they're trying to get these approvals? And, you know, the layer of bureaucracy that the states have added by implementing these modular programs at all is outrageous, because usually buildings have to go through the building department. But then with modular, you have to go through the state modular programs and then the building department. Mm. And what value are they really adding by doing that and coming in and inspecting our factories? You know, you don't have a approval process like that for other products. You know, even like this safety helmet didn't have to go through 2 years of approvals at a state modular program. And this is even about safety. So, sure. You know, we're working now actually with certain state regulators to try and come up with better modular programs that satisfy their desire to regulate, but also meshes with the practicality of actually getting it done, actually getting houses built without just blocking it. So,
which are the easier states to work with? Which are the more difficult ones?
We're kind of going through that. And I think it's a question of, now that we've done one, we know what's going to happen when we do the next one. A lot of the questions that the other states will ask have already been asked and answered. So we're really excited that when we go through the other states, it's going to be a quicker process.
Nice.
Then there are some states that don't have the modular program at all. And then you run into another problem in those states, which is now it's up to the building department. And some building departments are saying, okay, sure, we'll look at your plans and we'll approve your building. So we have a house that's gone in Utah, another in Oklahoma. Those went in, no problem. They went to the building department, they asked a few questions, and they approved it. But then we went to Hawaii, and they said, sorry, we don't have a modular program, therefore, fuck you, you can't put the house in.
Strange that they need housing so bad.
And you know what was fucked up about it? It was so awful that after the Maui wildfires happened, I called the building department and said, hey guys, can we get these units deployed out there ASAP? And they just said no. They said no, they didn't even give us a path to get it done. So it was really, you know, just completely outrageous, short-sighted. The people in the building department didn't even ask the questions to find out if the product could be inspected through a regular building process. They just said no. So we're fighting with them right now. And on all of this stuff, I'm ready to fight with them and to fight in any way I can. And I honestly don't even care what trouble I stir up. I don't care what lawsuits I get into. We have to go through, like I said before, and brute force this thing. So we're going to do it, and we're going to do it in the smartest, most strategic way we can. But in a lot of cases, you know, to make an omelet, you have to break some eggs, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a long time, it was easy for them to hide a lot of the bureaucracy so that they didn't look like the assholes. But now that anybody can have a voice on the internet, it's kind of becoming obvious that it's the permitting departments, they would say it's the greedy contractors or developers keeping housing expensive. But really, if you look at the laws, it seems like it's really on the permitting departments. And now that everybody knows that, it's on the permitting departments to fix it before people really start getting their pitchforks out.
And you're so right about people having a voice through social media and technology. And, you know, recently I've started posting some of this stuff online because people are complaining. They're saying, where are the houses? Why are they sitting in your parking lot? And I'm trying to now show them, well, this is why, and call them out. And on one hand, I was scared to do that before because I didn't want them to come back and say, you know, this guy sees I tweeted that, you know, his department blocked my house, so fuck Boxable, we're going to make it even harder for them. But then I realized they're going to do that anyway. We're going to have to fight through their rules. We're going to have to either comply or change the rules. So I might as well let people know why this is happening, why things are delayed, why our projects are getting canceled, and call them out and bring attention to it. So it's really cool. And I've really loved the platform X, you know, formerly Twitter, for that, because on that platform, you're able to get in front of some really high quality people. You know, you go on there and you post, and it's not like you're on Instagram and it's just your friends following you. Now all of a sudden, everyone's seeing you. If the post is quality enough to get people's interest, some really big, important, powerful people are seeing you, and then they're actually engaging. So the lowly peasant on the street can actually talk to the king, And they'll hear what they're saying, and then they'll be actually able to flex their muscle a little bit and maybe change things.
Yeah, back in the day when people started talking like that, they'd do a Business Insider hit piece on you, but now the Business Insider hit piece is almost a feather in your cap because they go after all the best innovators. Pretty much every cool person in the world gets attacked by Business Insider at some point. They're falling, they're firing all their employees, like the castle's coming down.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious, the stuff that's happening with Business Insider and Ackman and others getting pissed off because their reporting is just not sincere. They don't care about the truth at all. They care about how can I spin this to make it the most outrageous headline I can so that someone reads the headline and then they decide to pay us $10 to read the article. And obviously people know, you know, they've done that to me. There's some truth to some stuff, and then there's blatant lies, and then there's real problems that are the reason the company exists. You know, you can say that, you know, housing's fucked up and Boxable's fucked up, but the reason we're here doing this is because these problems exist. That's the whole point. Yeah. You know, you can't point to the problem and say you're a failure because this problem exists. Well, if that problem wasn't there, we wouldn't be here doing this. So
I feel the same way about Business Insider. If they hadn't eroded all their trust, I probably wouldn't have a job.
Yeah, and you know, it's definitely funny seeing people, you know, talking shit and bringing light to this stuff online. But obviously, you know, they've done absolutely massive damage to our company because people do read the headlines and they believe the headlines. And fake news has been a problem for a long time. But fortunately, back to that social media thing, now the truth is starting to come out on a lot of these fronts, and the data can be presented as it is factually, and people can come in and come to their own conclusion after they see it all because of these social media platforms.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Just keep going down here.
Let's see. Hold on one sec. Got to make a call.
Let's get your mic muted so it's not...
It's fine. I won't say anything. I won't say it. I don't want to mess up the mic.
What's going on? Okay, we're good. Yeah. So we'll take a little minute here, but it's so cool seeing the progress. They've got way more units here than last time. And I guess you could see over here, they got kind of the inner wall structure exposed. A little bit of the glue, it's a foam. And so I guess it's got really good insulatory properties. This is maybe 5 or 6 inches.
That called me, so I had to take the call real quick.
And on the other side of the windows, they have them
framed
out with lumber over here.
Yeah, he just told me to call me and I sent him one of these.
Yeah, it's awesome to get to see all the progress. I mean, I've been coming here for a couple of years, so to see from kind of an empty factory now, they've got, it's full all kinds of stuff, and I'm sure the other factories are full too.
Sorry?
All kinds of materials over
I'm
there.
I'm pumped for this video.
And,
it's going to be great.
It's great to hear Galliano seems in good spirits about the
progress.
Might even
be able to use this instead of a factory update because this is what it will be. Is my mic up on or?
It's on.
Okay, cool. All right. We can talk a little bit about these panels.
Yeah.
What we've got here is the current generation. These are going to be phased out later this year, and we're going to bring in a new generation where we've selected different building materials, re-engineered some stuff in an effort to make it stronger, cheaper, more energy efficient, all of that. But in coming up with this design, we just wanted to make things really simple, and we wanted to hit all those points. So we came up with the idea, let's use these foam insulated panels, which were an existing building technology, but we took it and we tweaked it and we tweaked it and we tweaked it. So basically we've got, you know, these big sheets, I think 4 feet wide by 10 feet of wallboard. We've got these big blocks of foam that are 6 inches by 4 by 10 roughly. And all of these parts are cut on a CNC to a very precise measurement. And then they can be rapidly assembled together. So when you look at something like this versus lumber framing, you know, there's no way they're ever going to build a lumber frame wall at the output of 1 every 3 minutes, especially on site when we're able to do it because we have less parts in the wall. You know, the machine comes, it lays the pieces out. We glue it together with adhesive, which creates like an irreversible chemical reaction where actually the glue seeps into the micro cracks in the product and basically acts as if it were you know, a billion tiny little nails, because it's actually in there and it's gone in and it's grabbed it, you know, so it's not going to come unglued or anything because of the type of glue that we're using.
And then you feed the wiring through here. And what are these holes at the bottom? Does that connect the floor?
Yeah, so we have pathways through the walls, floor, and ceiling where we can put in the wiring, and where the customer can later come in and modify the wiring if they want, really easily, without drilling through studs, without cutting open sheetrock. You have little access panels where you can pop in and grab those wires and fish them through. And then these ones are to put in nails to lock the wall into the floor.
Nice.
To fasten it all together. It's pretty cool. Maybe we'll just go through to the next building now.
Okay.
Because I think
I've seen all that stuff last time.
Most of this stuff is old and it's all getting ripped out.
How many employees do you guys have now?
I'm not sure. Maybe it's around under 150, maybe something like that.
Wow. And what's the typical amount of time for them to be on the line? Like, how long does it take to train them up?
Well, we do 10-hour shifts every day, mm-hmm. and then there's a certain amount of direct labor hours attributed to each house. Our new equipment and process and 2.0 product brings those direct labor hours down dramatically, so we're really excited to see those cost savings. We came in here a few years ago, and we were able to get this building, and frankly, it was a miracle that we got this building. It was during COVID, so the building... the warehouse developers were, frankly, they were scared that the market might collapse, like 2008 type of thing.
You got a deal.
And so we got a deal. And they handed, you know, Paolo and I the keys to this building with, you know, no operating history of the company, no money in the bank, no personal guarantee. They gave us like 4 months free rent. And it was just a miracle that we even got this building.
Take a look at all these fucking boxables they got over here. Holy cow.
Yeah. They started putting up new buildings next door, and not by our own planning, but just by luck, we grabbed another building next door, and then we grabbed another building next to that. So now we have
three
factory buildings, and it's just being crazy that it worked out like that.
How many units do you have out here?
Yeah, so we have these units kind of stacking up out here while we dial in the sales process.
Pay attention to Hawaii.
Get through the regulatory hurdles. You know, we've offered to send all of these to Hawaii many times and mentioned that to many people, including FEMA and others. And we've been told no for just every reason under the sun, and it's crazy. Originally, all these units were meant to go to a job where we had one of the largest copper mines in Arizona. They needed workforce housing. So we thought, all right, we got this big order, we got the deposit paid, we're gonna start making these houses, shipping them out, and then we'll worry about building up the rest of the sales. After that, we have time. But then the regulators in Arizona came in and shut that project down. And that was after, you know, everyone had okayed it, and including this multi-billion dollar mining operation. You know, they said it's okay. Our building department says it's okay. And the regulator, the state regulators came in and said, no, it's not. Stop the job and go through this, you know, application process. So then all of a sudden we're stuck with a bunch of these units, which, by the way, they had a few customizations on them. So then it was a little bit harder to go put them elsewhere. So that's all mostly resolved now with that job. And then we're working on signing other big orders to deploy these out. And you'll see online there's some projects that have been going out, and some of the contractors and installers who are setting them up are posting pictures of them. So we now have houses in, I think, California, Virginia, Nevada, Arizona, Utah, Oklahoma. We did get one into Hawaii.
Nice.
And the workaround there was we put wheels on the house. Mm-hmm. So another crazy thing, there's these products called Park Model RVs. Their code is ANSI 11.9. Basically, a while back, someone figured out, hey, if we build a house and call it an RV and get everyone to agree to this, we can build to this different standard and deploy these houses with less regulation. So they got that through, and you know, park model RV became a thing. And at a certain point, not at the beginning, we realized, oh, our buildings actually meet this ANSI 119 code if we put wheels on it.
Yeah.
So that was the one that went to Hawaii. We put the wheels on it, and they were unable to stop us because the wheels were on it. But think how stupid that is.
Ridiculous.
Why does a fucking house need wheels? You know, it does not need wheels. Should not have wheels.
So that they can't give you a mortgage on it.
Exactly. I mean, it's just the mental gymnastics that they go through to create all these maze and labyrinth of rules is just insane. So, but we're going to keep fighting through it all. And we're going to try and fix all these things.
Good.
And we'll find our way through it. One cool thing about the company is we've attracted the interest of so many people that we have this huge list of people, you know, 100,000 plus indications of interest to buy the product. So, and there is so much demand for housing because of all these problems that we'll find the places that welcome us.
Yeah.
And then people will start seeing projects in these places. And then the regulators will start seeing these projects. And, you know, slowly, I think the dominoes will fall and, you know, we'll be able to keep growing these things and find homes for all these houses that are so badly needed.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah. We'll go across here to the next building.
Another one of my favorite things about Boxable is you guys raised a lot of your money or all the money through crowdfunding, right?
Yes. We were able to basically put an offer online for people to invest in the company, and mm-hmm. that was very successful. And that's allowed us to move faster than we had originally planned. Originally, the plan was smaller, but every step of the way, we've ended up bigger than where we thought we would be. So, you know, every day I'm standing here looking back and I'm like, holy shit, how did we get here so fast, so big? So pretty exciting.
VC can be so predatory. They give you a bunch of money, but it's a loan. There's all these terms attached.
It is predatory. And there's a good example of that recently, which was Veev, which was funded by, I believe, Fifth Wall and Lennar.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out of business after revoking a significant amount of funding. I think that they were promised like about $500 million.
Wow.
And then the investors didn't like what was happening. So they cut off the money and
kills
then boom,
business.
The company was done. So the way we funded it, we're basically, you know, in control of our own destiny. For now, you know, we'll see what happens. They'll probably become a point where, you know, my control will be diminished, but hopefully by then the business is mature enough to survive on its own.
Yeah.
But, you know, we could have gone down that route. And then, you know, when the stock market tanked and all the money dried up, they would have cut us off and we would have been dead already. So really fortunate to come across that way of funding the company. Anyway, this is the next building. Basically what we're doing is building one is going to be basically panel making and assembly. This building is going to be parts making, and then the other building will be some sub-assemblies and mostly storage. So you can see, you know, these guys over here working on this new equipment that we've just got in, and they're putting together all this amazing stuff and testing it out and getting it online so we can start making parts.
What's the raw input for this system?
So this one is for the foam. So they're doing all these test cuts. So you can see, you know, here's the holes in the foam. It's got like a wire that shakes and cuts it.
Cool.
as it goes. And, you know, by doing it this way, we're able to get, you know, quite a high volume of foam for the core of the walls. That gives us our insulation, tremendous structural strength and other benefits. So, you know, pretty crazy machine. I mean, at this point, I look at this equipment and I'm like, I don't even know how the hell this thing works.
Do you have any idea what the, like, idiot index is on the foam wall panel? So like your raw cost versus the final?
So the labor hours for us to take a raw block of foam and, you know, make it into that is pretty damn low, because you're only going to have a couple guys, you know, running this equipment, and then, you know, that's going to produce X amount of houses every day.
Then so, just a little electricity and you got the fixed costs covered.
Yeah. So I don't think I should say the numbers on
sure.
it, because you'd have to look in our SEC filings, but you can see what I believe in our SEC filings, you can see what our direct labor cost is per house now.
Cool.
And then hopefully that comes down tremendously with all this automation later on. And we're really excited to see you know, where that number ends up.
Yeah, absolutely. Last time I was here, this was just a big open space.
Yeah, yeah.
What are those yellow corner brackets?
Yeah, so those are some basically carts we've made to load the panels on and then tilt them and then do work on them and then tilt them back up and send them down the line. So, you know, for example, maybe stringing electrical lines through the house might be done on these.
And these are your carts. Custom trailers?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, obviously this is like, you know, thousands of dollars worth of steel and wheels that you just don't need for our product.
Okay.
But because of the regulations, it's going to be on a lot of our products. So that's unfortunate. And, you know, we'll see where things go on that front. But, you know, this is a pretty cool way because with the ANSI 119 product, they did something amazing. And I don't even know who kind of pioneered this, but in most state laws, it says that these types of park model homes are allowed to be built through a manufacturer self-certification that they meet the code. So therefore, just saying, if the manufacturer says it meets the code, you're good. Versus modular, we have to prove to 10 different parties that we meet the code. We have to do extensive third-party testing. We have to have inspectors in our plant. So on one hand, you have the house on wheels, no regulation, no approvals, no extra cost on that front. And then you have the exact same house without the wheels, and they're saying, oh, this one apparently is so dangerous, it's like a nuclear bomb, and we have to really make sure that it's perfect. So where's the common sense there? You know, you're gonna have, you know, two houses exactly the same, one massive regulation that adds cost, the other self-certification.
I mistook this for your shipping solution, but this is your compliance solution. Is that the shipping solution?
Yeah, yeah. So this stays on here just to make it into a park model RV.
Sure.
And then this is one of the trailers that we've engineered. We have a bunch of different solutions on trailers.
Yeah, I love this thing.
Yeah, so you'll notice. So this is a trailer that would not stay with the unit. So we've done things that make it cost a little more to build the trailer, but then can reduce the shipping cost. For example, you'll see that the wheels are behind the load, and then that means the trailer can actually be lower down and we can get it lower on the highway because we're always working within these shippable dimensions. And if we go too high, it becomes over height. So like a trailer like this, the wheels are underneath, it sits up higher. So this can be connected to a pickup truck and you can tow a casita right to your job site and deploy it with this. And this is like one generation. We already have a few more versions engineered. And then, you know, the shipping solution is going to be a big mix of stuff, you know, a big kind of logistics puzzle. There'll be, you know, these type of trailers. We'll have big low boys on big rigs. Maybe eventually we'll have a rail solution. And then hopefully one day, once we're big enough, we'll be able to subsidize the shipping by, let's say, we have our own truck and trailer. It drives to LA, and then maybe on its way back, it picks up a load that someone pays for, drops it off near here, and then comes back to the factory. And I think that the shipping costs can really come down at scale through that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's really cool thinking.
Yeah.
Becoming a logistics company. What's this equipment over here?
Yeah, so I mean, pretty much in this building, we're cutting pieces of lumber, we're cutting foam and a few other things.
Mostly subtractive manufacturing.
Yeah, and so you can see there's a few different machines here doing different things. And, you know, these machines, they're pretty custom. They've got like long lead time. You know, it can take 18 months to get a machine like this.
This is like a true 2x4.
This is actually LVL lumber.
Okay.
So common lumber, the cheaper one, is just like a 2x4 that's cut from a tree.
It's like 3.5 by 1.5.
The thing we don't like about that is they're not dimensionally accurate. So all those 2x4s are a little bit wonky or whatever, and that doesn't sync up with a precise manufactured product. So we're using this lumber that's LVL, laminated lumber. Mm-hmm. So you can see this thing is pretty damn straight.
Yeah.
And then you can also see there's layers in here. So basically they've cut off these like shavings of the lumber, and then they've glued it back together into a big block, and then they cut it down to size. So then you get a piece of wood that's actually straight. You can see over here some of these pieces. And this goes into the product, into the panel, basically to give us something to grab onto. Mm-hmm. So we showed you before the fiber cement board skin, the EPS foam core, and that's like what makes up most of the panel. But then around the perimeter, we need to like finish it off somewhere. So we put these LVLs in around the perimeter, and then we cut down these certain shapes so that they can actually interlock. So you'll have like a female piece like this, and then that'll be maybe on the floor, and then you'll have a male one that's cut in the male shape here, and then when you drop the panel in, it locks in, and then boom, you're locked in, you're airtight, you're watertight. There's also a gasket solution that's part of this, which you saw in those other panels where a gasket goes on here as well.
That's great, kind of foolproof.
Yes.
It's cool seeing the thicker lumber. People compare the lumber they use today to the lumber they used like 100 years ago, and it's always small and wimpy. You guys are kind of going back to the bigger, stronger stuff.
Yeah, and there's all different stuff, and you know, we're gonna probably end up, you know, changing this 10 more times, sure, as we keep whittling away at the cost and the efficiency. And here's just another CNC machine. This one's for cutting some wall boards and down to shape. And you know, we're putting all this in now, and then hopefully in a few months, this place will be filled with people just cranking out parts at a really high rate. You know, another miter saw here just to cut down the lumber here as well.
Anything in Factory 3 yet?
Yeah, well, we're going to head over there next and show you what's going on over there. It's all right now in the process of getting like all swapped around. Mm-hmm. So everyone's scattered out, swapping things.
Yeah, it's so cool. Every time I come here, it's so different. You guys are always making changes.
It's crazy. And you know, I wish we could have had all the answers on day one and built it and be done with it, but that's just not how this can go. And I think the iterations will be endless. You know, you see a new iPhone every year, you see a new pickup truck every year. That's how it's got to go. We've got to keep innovating on the manufacturing methods, on the building materials, on the product design, all that kind of stuff.
I bet it will help too this is going to take a long time, but in 20 years when people see how long they last and it's not like a typical mobile home where it's,
yes,
dilapidated.
Yes, and the mobile home code is pretty bare bones and does result in kind of an inferior product in some cases. In a lot of cases, they're really nice as well. But what we're doing is trying to engineer this to the highest standard. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that. And it's not necessarily because, you know, I want the house to last 100 years. You know, if I could provide a solution that was way cheaper that lasted 30 years, I might do that. But we wanted to have one product that works everywhere so that we can mass produce. So in order to do that, we have to meet the highest standards everywhere all in one product. So, you know, some people who build a house in Florida, they might build it one way to handle hurricane winds. Or if they build it in California, they'll build it one way to meet earthquake mm-hmm. requirements. Or if they're building it up north, they need more insulation for the cold weather.
Or fires, so, hurricanes, whatever the local issue is.
So we had to take all the highest standards of all the lands and drop them all into one product,
nice,
and still come in with the lowest price. So just like a crazy challenge to be able to do that. And you know, I think we're well on our way to it. So you know, what we're gonna put out is gonna be really nice. And just like by default through some of our principles, like standardized mass manufacturing using the CNC machines, not having guys cutting stuff with a handsaw, you're going to end up with a higher quality product by doing it like that.
Yeah, mobile homes have kind of got a bad reputation, but you guys have such a distinctive look. I think you have a chance to build your own reputation.
Yeah. Fortunately, we've not been mixed in with them at all, and we thought we might be at the beginning. Here's just a little example of some testing that we're doing. So all of our houses, all the parts, they go through extensive third-party testing. But before the third-party testing happens, we do the in-house testing to make sure it's good. So what this does is it sprays water on the house with a dye on it and to see if it's going to leak.
Okay.
And then the test is so crazy that not only do you have to stop it from leaking, but they actually pull a vacuum on it. So that, like, this bag is on here because we're gonna suck air on this side,
wow,
and spray water on this side. So if there's any pinhole in there, it's gonna get sucked through by that vacuum.
Cool.
You know, and obviously no other house is going to stand up to that. Like my house at home, if you put a vacuum, even if I sprayed a water hose on the wall, water's going in. It's a 30-year-old house, you know? So, you know, our products just have to be so up far and above, you know, the other stuff that's out there.
You need a good exhaust fan when you have such a good seal.
Yes, yes. That's another like interesting thing about insulation that I've noticed that doesn't make sense in the building code. So they have like requirements for high levels of insulation and high levels of tightness.
Yeah.
But then they also have a requirement to circulate the air every, you know, hour or a certain amount of air has to leave the house. So it's like, wait a second.
Contradictory.
Wait a second. If why am I insulating the house if I'm heating the air and then sucking it right out? So I think the truth about insulation is it's kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Because great, you kept the air insulated, but then you just dumped it all out by code. Yeah. So you know, I could engineer, if I was allowed to, by building code, kind of a happy medium there that would result in, you know, really great cost effectiveness, but unfortunately, no.
3D printed buildings have the same problem. They're such a good seal that I stayed overnight in one and we had a CO2 monitor and the CO2 levels were getting really high.
Yeah, I think they all need little fans in there and timers on them or whatever to keep the air.
They've learned their lesson and improved
flowing
on that.
Through. Yeah.
So I guess you guys do that too. You've got some good exhaust fans making sure the CO2 levels stay low. Four people in the house.
Yeah, and we'll be able to manage that really nicely. You know, all the air in the whole system. We're using the mini split heating and cooling.
Cool.
Which is really nice. No duct work, which duct work is nasty. Like every time I move into a new house, I'll have them come and clean the ducts because otherwise it's filled with dust and mold and it literally makes you sick. So the mini splits don't have that problem. Also, because they don't have the ducting, there's less loss of the heat and cool because it's just contained in this piping where the refrigerants go through. So I really like the solution.
And you've got the military base over here. They were your first client, right?
Yeah, that's the Clark County Armory. So they got all these cool tanks and military gear over there. And then we were fortunate to get started off with this big order from the Department of Defense.
150 units.
Yeah, 156 houses. Basically, you know, it was, like I said before, it was me, Paolo, and Kyle with this wacky house design that I built with my bare hands, with no experience with building construction. We had three of them built, showed it online, and then got a call from a guy that buys stuff for the military.
Oh, cool.
And they came and they visited us. And I said, all right, guys, like, I'd love to take your money and try to do this, but just so you understand, like, we don't have a factory. You see, we're in a garage. We've never done this before. We have no money. Are you sure you want to do it? And they were like, yeah, let's do it.
So what was the order of operations? To build those three units, were you guys self-funded?
Yeah, so we put in, you know, a few million dollars up front of our own money to get things going.
Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain point realized, you know, we can't fund ourselves a multi-billion dollar operation. Therefore, we need to raise money from investors. And then we figured out how to do that.
Did you get the military contract before or after the crowdfund?
The crowdfund had just started and maybe had a few million bucks in it when we got that order. And the plan to start the first factory was a much, much smaller factory. And when we got that order, we said, we're not going to be able to do this order on time with this small plan for this small factory. So we scaled everything up to make the numbers crunch. And then we went and grabbed this building. And like, I remember at one point the Department of Defense came and I brought them to this building and we toured it. We didn't even have the lease signed. It was an empty building. It wasn't even ours. And we're showing them around this building. And I'm like, man, I hope we get this building that we're showing them and telling them we're planning to get. And just like crazy stuff, you know. It felt like that movie, War Dogs. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah, so they get a big government contract and then they just go fucking nuts,
doing
everything they can to make it happen. We did
Agile
not. We
fuck.
Did not buy Chinese houses and relabel them like they did in the movie. I think they bought the Chinese bullets and they relabeled them. So, pretty funny. But yeah, we pulled that off, and there's some beautiful pictures of that project. Looks really nice. It ended up going to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. For some reason, they needed 150 housing units down there. And, you know, that even doing it, like even doing that region was fucking crazy, because that's like one of the most harsh weather conditions in the world. You're on the water, so you have salt spray from the ocean corroding things. You have, you know, hurricane speed winds. Mm-hmm. You have massively high humidity. If you look online, you'll see that the other buildings they have there have huge problems with mold and rot and things falling apart. And but we decided, yeah, let's put our untested prototype, first ever product, and go crazy and put it in this place. So luckily, I think it all worked out well.
It doesn't sound like you guys are in a money crunch right now. It's more of a regulation crunch so that you can sell all those units you got out there. Is that be the cash flow?
You know, the clock is always ticking on the money. Because, you know, as well as I think we've done with it, if you look at our balance sheet, you know, we could run out of money.
Sure.
And if investor funds don't keep coming in, we could run out of money. And if, you know, Business Insider scares people and doesn't give them the full truth about what we're doing, and people don't want to invest anymore, we're not going to make it there. There's a certain amount of money that I think gets us across the valley to the other side. Where this thing's actually dialed in, selling, profitable. So, you know, that's how it goes with any startup. You're always looking into the eyes of that. So.
I'm sure it's a lot, because it's a big problem to solve, but I hope you guys do.
And that's the thing about this is, it has to be big. It has to be massive scale. It has to be billions of dollars. And you know, we're not gonna solve anything without billions of dollars. You know, we're not going to solve anything making even 5,000 units out of this factory. But I believe that if we keep going down this path and we keep, you know, innovating and proving ourselves and doing what we say we're going to do, that the market will respond by providing us the resources to get this done. So
the social media algorithms definitely respond. I mean, people love Boxable. It's such an obvious thing when people see the unfolding and people love it.
Yeah, we just got some videos that were doing crazy on Instagram. So like we had one that did 8 million views,
wow.
One that did 6 million views, one that did 2 million views. And I don't really know why some do well and some don't. I don't think anyone does.
Me except either,
the algorithm. But you just hit it right sometimes, and those videos are so valuable, and it's crazy. Like the marketing dollars we would have had to spend to have $8 million, 8 million people see our video. What's that even worth? It must be millions of dollars to get, you know, a video like that that's not organic.
The algorithms are so powerful these days. They find the people that want to see it.
Yeah, and we keep doubling down on the social media, and that's the engine that's gonna drive this thing to the finish line, is, you know, keep getting the word out. And it pays off, not just in investor dollars, it pays off in like customers and employees and suppliers and innovators and everyone under the sun just seeing what you're doing and saying, hey, I'm interested in it because of this reason. And then we can grab onto whatever this reason is.
Really cool. So this is the third factory.
Yeah. We were previously producing the foam bricks in here. So we have our old style cutting equipment, building the foam bricks in here. And then pretty much this is going to transition to mostly storage, because there's so much volume of raw materials, you know, that has to flow through, because the houses are big, that we need a lot of space to build them. So the plan for, like I said, this building is storage, a few sub-assemblies. The next building is cutting parts, and then the first building is assembly of those parts and also panel manufacturing. So totaling about 400,000 square feet between the three buildings.
And this is the raw foam?
Yeah. So the foam is, let me just take my sweater off. I'm hot after the walk. The foam is currently, we're buying it. Oops. Wait, sorry, this is gonna take a second.
It seems like a great use case for the Tesla trucks, the semis, because I know they can't hold a ton of weight because the electricity range is reduced a lot with high. But if you have just foam, it's so light and so big. Maybe you guys need a couple of those Tesla semis.
Oh yeah, the weight pays off on a lot of fronts. And that's been a really big thing that we focus on, is keeping the weight down. Anything from the shipping cost, the gas, the equipment required on site to lift a unit is dependent on weight. And the crazy thing about those foam blocks is there is nothing better for weight and the structural benefits you get from it. So it's like, I think 98% air.
Wow.
Yeah, because, and it's 1 pound per cubic foot density. So it's really an amazing product. I've been looking forever for something better because it has two main weaknesses. One is it off-gases pentane during the manufacturing process, mm-hmm. which, you know, they say is an environmental issue, but I think it's kind of BS and it's kind of not. But we do have a process to recapture that pentane during the manufacturing process so that they can't say anything. But there's more, you know, regulatory issues getting that going for the manufacturers of that. And then the other one is the fire. Obviously the foam will melt if it gets hot. Mm-hmm. So then when you're trying to get a multi-hour rated assembly, you have to figure out how are you going to stop the heat from touching the foam. And we've been able to do that and get the 1 hour rated assembly, which is required for multifamily, through basically just nailing on sheetrock onto there.
Yeah.
But we're always looking for better ways to do it. We have a bunch of new designs. We have new designs that don't have the foam. We have new designs that have a different type of foam. So we'll see where we end up on that. But if we do stick with the EPS foam, I suspect one day we'll be actually manufacturing it ourselves. So going from that 2%, which is the raw beads, mm-hmm. and expanding it into the big foam blocks. Yeah.
Almost every form of insulation is super flammable. So it's not like your guys are the only ones with that problem.
Yeah, we've been looking lately at rock wool, which is like basically a molten rock that's spun into kind of a web. It seems really promising, but there's a lot of other considerations there and downsides to doing it that way. The cool thing about the foam is when you laminate it all together into a panel, you get this incredibly strong panel, and you get benefits from the insulation that's not just insulating, it's also like kind of structural strength.
Is this where I say poopy pants?
Yeah, so if you want to be taken from the regular tour to the top secret tour, that's the code word. Yeah, so these are our old foam cutters that we're using to cut the current foam. And then the new version is what you saw over there, which is more automated. It doesn't, the new one doesn't use heat. This one uses heat to cut it, so there's a little bit of a smell. So that new one is pretty cool. Okay, take a breath.
This has been an incredible podcast, and it's going to be totally raw, so you guys are really getting the, this is how it is in real life here at Boxable.
Let's post the whole thing. Okay, so.
You got a couple of the units here attached together, two or three units.
Yes, exactly. So while we're thinking about, you know, what do we do next? What products does the market want? Obviously, casitas are great. But, you know, what other kind of configurations can we do? People want 2, 3, 4 bedroom houses.
Yeah.
So, you know, we said, let's take our 20 by 20 box. Let's stick them together. Let's tweak the interior a little bit and see what we can come up with. And this thing is absolutely beautiful. When you see it on video, it doesn't do it justice from when you walk on it in person.
It's big.
Yeah. And basically what it is this is just three boxes put together. So the main box is just a casita, except we've taken out the bed and the couch. So nothing's really changed on that. Then we've connected another one box on the side that just has, you know, I think a closet and then is divide or a bathroom and is then divided into two units. And then we have another box that's just a big empty space, and that's the master bedroom. So all of a sudden, you know, you've gone from casita, tiny house company to, oh, they're building other houses.
Yeah.
And they're semi-custom and they're configurable. So even if our manufacturing line is producing a casita box, a two-bedroom box, and a one-bedroom box, you're gonna be able to get a ton of different layouts and floor plans with that, and absolutely beautiful. Do communities where you have all these kind of semi-custom homes in the communities. Let's go in.
So this in total, like 1,200 square feet or about? Roughly
1,000 1,080, I think.
Oh, wow.
So three sixty-one each casita. Check it out. Oh. Actually, let's sit here so I can see it. And here we are. This is an actual real house. All the same stuff, 9.5 foot high ceilings, the kitchen, bathroom. And then this way we've got the two bedroom, and this is the master. And then that creates kind of an L shape. And in the fourth empty space, we've put a little deck out there.
Yeah, cool. So this is one bathroom?
No, I think it's got three bathrooms.
Three bathrooms, one in each unit. Let's see. We got a bedroom. Hopefully that doesn't get us demonetized. This is a, is it the same size bathroom, Dito, as the other units?
It's a little bit bigger.
A little bigger, cool. Yeah, huge TV. I mean, this is like a real house now. You're not talking about a tiny home. You're talking about regular housing, 1,080 square feet. They could probably even stack another floor on top. And then you got 2,000 square feet. It's kind of standard home size.
I'll be done in like 30,
all kinds of two bedrooms in this unit. So I guess they were able to split this boxable. You get the bathroom on this side.
Yeah, yeah.
Bedroom over here, another bedroom over here. And they share that bathroom over there on that side, a little toy Cybertruck up in the corner. I got one of those on order. We'll see how long it takes for it to get delivered. But then you got, how do we get onto the balcony out here?
All right, I'll see you in a minute.
Since you have the L-shape, it kind of naturally lends itself to having this cool outdoor space. And yeah, it's really unique. You got a huge TV out here, watch the game.
What do you think?
Sweet.
Yeah, sweet, right? So right now we're just trying to get some big orders on this. So we just built this like in the last week or so, and we're trying to show it to all our big interested parties and say, let's just do a community with this, you know, sign up for 500, sign up for 1,000. So hopefully we'll lock someone in on that, and that'll be a really big, we've engineered some of the cost out by reducing the materials used in the parts, like I was talking about cabinets earlier, and you know, it all comes back to scale. You know, the only way Boxable succeeds and fixes housing is if we have Tesla level scale. Our CFO is just in near the Cybertruck factory, I believe, and he sent me a video of this thing. I'm sure you've seen it, and it was just crazy because he's driving by filming the building, and the building just never ends.
Yeah, it's huge.
And it goes down and down to the vanishing point. And I was like inspired by it. I was like, oh my God. I was like, that's what we need. It's so obvious. That's what we need with housing. We need mass production of housing on the same level and scale that you see with automobiles. That's only going to be possible if someone fixes the shipping problem and innovates on the building materials. And, you know, that's a big play. You know, that's a big market. Building construction is trillions of dollars around the world. It's one of the biggest markets. It's one of the last pre-industrial, pre-factory markets. There's just so much opportunity. There's so much upside. There's so much demand. There's so many people in the world. You know, in the U.S. alone, think about the immigration numbers that we're seeing. I saw a chart where there was more immigrants than new births in the country.
Wow.
So where are they going to live?
Need a lot of houses.
Things are not going to get better, you know, if we keep building using these old methods where you build one house in 9 months, you know, come on. So frankly, I'm amazed no one's, you know, done this already.
Well, it's hard.
And yeah, it's hard. You know, it's grueling, and it's frankly like brutal. You know, and every day we just feel like we're just like fighting in a war.
Don't give up.
but we have our battles that we're victorious in, and opportunities keep flowing in. And I think, you know, as long as we just keep showing up, keep grinding away, you know, everything on the other side comes out, you know, better and more amazing, you know, as a general philosophy in life. So, you know, I think we can win.
Yeah. Heck yeah. And I guess the big things to look forward to are the regulatory advancements and maybe a huge project of units like this.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, you know, we open the floodgates to casitas in states where there we have modular approval, starting with Arizona, or states where you don't need modular approval. We start bridging the gap between the end of our assembly line and a customer actually moving in, which means interfacing with contractors and developers who are going to do the dirty work that cannot be mass produced, which is permits, site work, earthwork, foundations, all those subcontractors. And, you know, once we kind of start signing those guys on board, we'll start getting those units, individual units, flowing out to backyard ADUs. And then simultaneously, hopefully we can sign up for some bigger projects that are multi-room, bigger houses. Those are going to be all really big wins. They're coming, you know. And we have a bunch of other stuff we're developing to make that all possible, including like our website portal and, nice. And all those kind of things. And, you know, educating the contractors and, you know, doing all this stuff.
It's almost like Tesla. If you cut out the middleman, like maybe you don't need a realtor. They can just buy the unit directly from Boxable, save another 5%.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Down the line, we're definitely, if we're scaled up enough to cut out that realtor, which I think they're already getting pushed back. They're getting sued for that,
yeah.
for the 5% to walk someone in a house thing. Yeah. So a lot of stuff, a lot of rooms for improvement and room for, cost reduction for sure. So
yeah, it's great to see
exciting
it.
Stuff.
I really appreciate you taking the time to give me the tour today. This was an awesome in-depth look, factory 1, 2, and 3 behind the scenes. Fuck Business Insider.
Yeah, it's good. I'm happy to kind of, you know, walk through it all. You know, I feel like we haven't been even filming enough content lately, so I'm really excited for this to go out so people can get a look at it all and, you know, understand when they say, you know, where's my casita, and they understand, you know, just how complicated and hard this is. Unfortunately, this is not a product that we can manufacture, like this hat, and put in a FedEx box and ship it to site.
Yeah.
There's just a lot more that goes into it. And, you know, I would have wished to simplify it down like that and just have it streamlined. But we have to have that dirty work in between. You know, we can have a streamlined manufacturing process that's efficient, but making everything else efficient is, you know, quite a challenge.
Yeah, I saw an awesome interview with Ellie in Space and your dad where he was saying that you guys want to be on Amazon Prime, where it's like 2-day shipping. It's like,
oh yeah,
so
that's
cool.
That's been kind of the dream and part of the pitch from the beginning. You know, you order the house and it shows up next day. You know, think of that. So long way to go between here and there, though, but maybe possible one day.
Cool. Well, thanks again, man. I'll
Good
stop
stuff.
By again next year.
Good stuff. Good to see you.